are not, I mean, in general, like, I obviously, as you can know, Carter, like, I go to a lot of events, like, more than any human being should probably ever go. And there are a few people who come up and are just as, like, energetic and, like, can't wait to tell you about their business as you. And so I think it was like I was just leaving for Amalfi, my honeymoon, even though it was before I got married. So I got married this past week, and then I did my honeymoon, like, at the end of June. We went to the Sam Zell event. And finally met you. I was like, oh, wow. Like, you are, like, put a face to a name. I was like, this guy is so energetic. I just want to have you guys on the show. So I figured, why not invite you, Carter Kennedy and Farhan Masood. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I get this correct? All right. CEO, founders of Solo Insight. And so I guess kind of before we even roll into things, normally companies are very, like, easy to kind of, like, depict. Like, what do you do? Well, we do this one thing. You guys are very deep. Like, you guys do some seriously techy, like, technology, crazy intensive stuff. So I want you guys to first just tell us a little bit about what Solo is, and then we'll start talking about, like, your own journeys and say how to get here. And before we started the show, we had, like, 50 years, 25 years of total career stories to be told. So we should be here for a while. We'll get into that stuff.
Yeah, in one phrase, you know, trying to simplify this whole work that we do, we're making security simple.
Okay.
We're making it easy for, you know, buildings, cities to make sure that everything is safe and secure, and it's easy to manage. So that's in a very...
But you're using a lot of technology and a lot of crazy, like, futuristic stuff to get to that point. So, like,
absolutely.
Talk a little bit about the actual, like, nuts and bolts, because if I'm not mistaken, there's facial recognition technology, and there's sort of the insights you're creating from people, like, where they're walking in and out of building lobbies, and, like, get into the nitty-gritty, like, what, how you guys are different from the rest of the security world, because I think it's actually... It, to me, very interesting, not just from a technology standpoint and a business startup standpoint, but from a sort of future-proofing the world standpoint, the way that we protect ourselves in our homes, the way that we, as we're more transient and we're staying in and out in our Airbnbs and kind of things are happening that are not, you know, it's like everything was off the grid, then everything was on the grid, there was cameras on us everywhere, and then people started migrating and living in Airbnbs and stuff, and it was like Ubers, and like there's a gap where people are, like, bad things are happening, good things too, but mostly bad things are happening that are not being caught and people are not protected. And this is sort of what I think might be the next evolution of high-tech security. So walk us through a little bit about the deeper part of what you do.
So we actually took a challenge to solve two major problems. You know, almost a decade ago, we actually could find out that the proximity cards that are actually used to secure every single building, and they'll be very easy to clone, and the passwords will be stolen.
Yep.
And there has to be a solution. There has to be the right way of managing everything. So we actually, you know, took interest in facial recognition, because that was the most natural way of recognizing people, even at a door or at a computer. And we wanted to fix facial recognition first. There are issues with biometrics. There are privacy advocates, they're screaming that facial recognition or biometrics is, you know, evading rights of people. Privacy is a major concern. So first thing that we wanted to fix about facial recognition was that it's based on proof of physical presence. So it's something that we wanted to create that should not work behind in the database, right? So it has to happen live when you're physically present. There has to be consent from the person who wants to use it. And he has to have the power to control his facial recognition. He can switch it off whenever he wants. And he has a right of erasure. It's like he can actually, you know, delete his profile whenever he wants. So, and then, you know, making sure that every single template is consented to every single device. So, you know, we digitally sign every single facial template to a device. That means that if you even copy one template and take it to another, it won't work unless that physical person gives consent to that. So making sure that first its biometrics are secured, and second, making sure that they can't be used without the consent of the original person. So that was the... There is a lot of artificial intelligence, neural networks, you know, that's been used, machine learning, deep learning, those algorithms. We keep learning about people. They're aging. They're gaining weight. They're losing weight. Defying age. And then Carter.
Yeah. He is well kept.
He's in a reverse gear. So
yeah, no yeah. kidding.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, it's actually a good segue point, because the questions that I think people have about the facial recognition is like privacy. But I actually think our privacy is already invaded enough that I'm like, I don't even really care about that as much as I actually think, technologically speaking, like iPhone, I have the X, looks like you do too. It doesn't work like all that great all the time. Like it works pretty well, but it doesn't work all the time. And as you start to gain weight and you start to age, like how well are we able to keep tabs on people and identify who they are? Is it so good now that, or are we getting to a point where it's so good now that you can literally tell if I'm, you know, what 65-year-old Scott will look is the same as 35-year-old Scott?
But you can actually predict. You can definitely predict. There are predictive models that you can actually use around the 3D mesh, and you can actually predict a face. What we do is we make sure that none of the private data is actually shared. For example, there's no pictorial form of our algorithm that exists in the system. Ensuring the privacy of the person.
Yep.
And these are mathematical algorithms. They are stored in an encryption. They're hashed. And, and every single key to every single device that has been hashed to has been digitally signed by a physical consent. So that's actually changes the way biometrics being used, right? So the biggest fear the privacy advocates have is that, so if your password is stolen, you still can change it. If your card is stolen, you can change your card. You can get a new card.
Yep.
But what if your face is stolen? What if somebody can use it in a bank when you're not there? So we made sure that first the technology should not work without my presence.
See, like that's the part that I think creates fear for people, though, is on the other side. Like, you can steal my social security like number, and I know that it is hard to get out of that. I know that people have some serious issues trying to get out of identity theft. But my face, like if we start using pieces like our face, our thumbprints, like all this stuff, you can steal a whole human pretty much. Like we're getting to a point where I can steal your information. I've got your face. I've got your thumbprint. I've got, your eyes. Like I've got all this stuff. How am I going to prove that this wasn't stolen from me? You know what I'm saying? Like it makes people feel hopeless sometimes, which is good, I think, at times, and also bad.
Yeah, it's exactly the same way we sign a check, for example, and we can say that it was not signed by me.
Yep.
So, there is better control that we brought in. For example, if your template is being used somewhere, you will be notified. You should be aware that somebody's using it. The first thing is that they should not be able to use it. We have to have created algorithms where you have to be in 1 meter distance from the camera. And you have to have given intent that you really want to use it, right?
Wink into the camera.
there are multiple ways you can actually, you just need to shy away from the camera, and it will stop functioning. So there are certain algorithms we built around, for example, people who have been sent safety videos and they don't watch it. They don't watch it. So we created a video player, a smart video player that works with your attention.
Yep.
So as long as you're paying attention to the video, it will keep playing. The moment you stop paying attention, it will stop playing. So it knows that you have registered what content that we have, been like trying to push for almost a century.
Yeah. So we actually, to this point, and then I want to kind of move into like how you guys get into this, because we had a company on here, Dumbstruck, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with them at all, but they're in the ad space. And essentially what they do is, by using facial recognition, they'll say, will you give us access to your phone camera while you watch this series of videos? And it sort of gives feedback on what they're, what they're interested in, what they respond to. And their play on this, of course, is to sell, to test videos and things for big brands and know, like, before you run this ad, like, people didn't respond or they found it was horrifying or whatever the case. So I'm starting to see outside of just security, like the use case for facial. I know that when Apple 10 came out with, their facial recognition was like, this is the broad scope into common, the regular person be like, oh, okay, this isn't, this isn't so dangerous. What brought you guys into this space?
So we were, this actually goes back to my time when I was working on a smart city project in Dubai. That's back in year 2004. That's when this idea struck me. And after watching Minority Report.
Yes.
Right? So it came
out. Which is what I thought of when I first saw you guys. It was like, the first thing I thought, I was like, well, and I didn't want to make the reference because when I talked to Dumbstruck, I was like, this is like Minority Report, only this actually is like Minority Report
in some ways. And, working with that project, we've been dealing with a lot of biometrics. Biometrics at that time was extremely expensive. I remember, purchasing Fujitsu Palm Wind sensors. One sensor would cost $250,000. Today it's less than 200.
Less than 200.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So I've actually, you know, been exploring and writing algorithms since that era, and we wanted to bring the government tech to private sector, make sure that, you know, the corporates can also benefit out of the similar technology, and, you know, can really improve on efficiency, compliance. And there are certain areas we will explain that how our technology is being used today. And in the oil and gas sector, for example, or in a multi-tenant building, the multiple use cases around, you know, warehouses and how those flows are actually, you know, automating and making people smarter about decision making and making sure, you know, your buildings are safe, secure, and insured.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are some of the applications you guys are finding other use cases in? Because, again, like, security was probably the most obvious one, but, like, where else is the application for you guys?
So, I would let Carter answer this question. He's the customer facing.
There you go.
You know, it's fairly simple. So we've taken a tact that our platform provides convenience and safety and security for buildings. And so a building might be a multi-tenant building, like there's this building down the street that we actually deployed in. They had issues around visitors coming in and out of the facility. That throughput was slow. The security guards and the visitor management solution was onerous. We were able to digitize that through our technology using QR passes. It's saving them time and money.
So walk through that a little bit, because, like, I will tell you, as a person who goes in and out of a lot of buildings, if I get hit in the junk one more time by one of the revolving glass doors that shuts because I have to check in or waiting, and we have to check our whole group of 10 guys in or 10 girls in, it is so arduous, and it is legitimately like a pain in the butt. How does your technology, I think I have a general idea, but, like, how would your technology work to make it to where we can come in and out of buildings and, you know, like, Joe's back in, Joe's back out?
So we were actually dealing with very complex scenarios here. It's like, so the building you're talking about has over 100 tenants, and each tenant would have different requirements from the front desk.
Yep.
And my guest comes in, and I'm a doctor.
Yep.
I'm HIPAA compliant. You can't take their passport. My guest comes in, and you must take their ID because I am a consulate. So, and I am, you know, running events for 300 people show up every day. So, you know, there are every kind of people that keep coming in, and security guards are keep under pressure that how I'm going to process this guy.
Yeah.
Right? You know, knowing. So we actually created AI-based contextually aware system. It's totally aware that with the moment you come in and you say that you're here to visit this, it takes up those rules and, you know, automatically makes the security person, the front desk person, extremely smart about decision making.
Yeah.
And we have given the ability first to the tenant to be able to invite their own visitors. So that was actually a distribution. Previously, I was picking my phone up and I'm calling the front desk and I would say that so-and-so is going to visit me. And now I can go on my app on my phone and I can invite people. They get a QR pass on their phone or on their email. They bring it up. And they can, in certain buildings, they or certain tenants allow, you know, to actually go without an ID. Certain require additional ID. And we created a mobile concierge concept. So there is a mobile app, and a security guard is not standing behind a desk. He's in front of the desk, and he just says, how can I help you? And just take the, you know, driver license and scan it. And there's no information we store from the driver license. There's no privacy concerns here. We just make it easier to type the information and try to match with the tenant if the similar person is expected.
Yep.
And when the match is found, you know, a badge is printed out of the, you know, the belt of that security person. So making the processes that would take 3 to 5 minutes standing in a queue is just simplifying. So previously, when we used to go to that building's reception, and we would see that hundreds of people gathered, somebody has forgotten their cards. There are people who are, you know, not scheduled. They are early, they're late. So there are no rules and regulations that have been, you know, now it's a breeze.
Yep.
So that's one change that we actually brought to a multi-tenant building. And that's like our technology can go in every building and, you know, manage, for example, in the same building, the back door. The backdoor is where the vendors are coming from, where the contractors are coming out. And you have to deal with, you know, if a contractor is coming and he's going to fix something, we need to make sure that his certificate of insurance is valid.
Yep.
So all that intelligence is fed into the system. You can call it a security ERP solution that actually thinks for from every single point. They're making sure that you're safe, you're secure, you have actually submitted all legal documents. So we collect legal documents. We can collect NDAs, waivers, consents, and feed them into the systems. We can actually scan COIs and turn them into, you don't have to really type them anymore. So totally automating that whole process. And then introducing the concept of speed lanes. The speed lane is something that you will have, if you are...
Sort of like TSA when you go to the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of it's like the TSA pre for buildings. Yeah. So once you are a trusted...
You've been here regular time. So Bloomberg, as an example, kind of has used that for a long time. Not the technology piece, but they've always had this... If you've been on Bloomberg, you've done interviews at Bloomberg... They get all your information, they take your photograph, and then after that, when they take your picture going forward, they write your name in, you're already in the system, so it's like, yeah, you're clear. You're clear to go, if that makes
sense. Yep, absolutely. And we want to make sure that the database was decentralized. Yep. So we keep that data on your phone rather than on with cloud with us. So, so that privacy concern, you can imagine that everything we do, we first make sure that the privacy is covered.
Yeah.
Right, so that's why we are the most obvious solution for GDPR. That's the European, new
general
law,
yep. General Data Protection Regulations.
Yep. So Carter is an expert on that.
So yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about your backgrounds and how you get into something like this, because this is a thing that, set aside the smarts and being able to create it, you have to understand these kind of problems to get into it in the first place.
I just want to nail one thing. So one product market, run product market fit. So one thing that we've done is we're automating paper trails in all buildings.
Yep.
So there's clipboards, there's security guards, there's high traffic areas where people are waiting that are expensive paid resources and it's a pain in the neck.
Yep.
And there's low traffic areas where security guards are waiting for people to arrive. We're automating both of those and saving money. There's a definable ROI. You as a company, whether you're a logistics center, a manufacturing plant, you're an oil and gas company, or whether you're a multi-tenant building, you have a lobby and you have a dock. And both of those need to be secured with our technology. Our 3D facial recognition is free. It's part of our access control point package. You can choose from a variety of different verification methods. But it's a very simple way to get into different buildings and then work our way up into access control in a variety of different forms, as well as logical control, where, as to Farhan's point, we've created proof of physical presence, which means you can use any workstation you want to open it up with your facial recognition, yep. Our proprietary patented 4,500 points to your face. Open that up, and that portal takes you to your computer. So we attach both physical and logical security. That end-to-end, it's called converged security. So that's kind of that's a plug there, but I think the common denominators are all buildings have front doors and back doors, and all buildings have inefficiencies around flows.
Yeah.
We are that business process workflow company that helps you drive outcomes, drive efficiencies.
Well, I think any time there's credentials, it doesn't matter whether you're coming in a building to shop or you're going into a building to work, you're going wherever, there's always passes and want to know who's in here, what they're here for, can they be here, should they be here, how long are they here, when did they leave, when did they check in, for security purposes, for protecting you guys while you're in this building, so we know where you are at all times, so that in case one of you were to disappear in this building, we could find you, but also to make sure that people who aren't supposed to be in this building aren't in it. And then there's like you were mentioning before, Carter, the sort of efficiency model of this, where I want to make sure that individuals who have clearance to be in certain areas don't have to stop to go get re-cleared to come in and out of doors room all day long when they should just be able to freely pass because we know that they belong here. So it's interesting. So what got you guys in particular into this?
So one thing is that, I told you about that 10 years ago, we figured out that the cards will be cloned and the passwords will be stolen. And that's what actually, brought us in. One of the solutions that we have today, for example, is credential activation. So In any building we go, if it's oil and gas or it's a multi-family building or, you know, a multi-tenant building, we do not rip and replace any existing hardware. We you know, we are middleware that, you know, interfaces with all existing systems and make them smart.
Yep.
So there's a lot of savings that, you know, there's no high cost of implementation. So what happens here is, like, you still use cards, and cards now is easily hacked. I can have an $80 gadget in my backpack, and I can ride in the same elevator as you are riding, and I can scan your card without you knowing, and I can reuse it to enter any facility. So if you're a high privileged user, I can have high privileged access copied from you. So that's a big threat. At the same time, we actually see that the passwords are being stolen. You know, we hear it every day now. There's, like, security breaches that are happening and passwords are stolen. And most of them are because people keep weaker passwords, or they keep the same password and use it on the weaker site.
Yeah, I just use the weak password for everything.
That's So
that's right. Only one.
It's like, you know. So
whether you want to, you know, access my ESPN subscription or my bank account, you can.
Right. So, you know, how you can actually sort out that right now, if we say that let's shift everything to two-factor authentication, multi-factor, bring biometrics into the play, and, you know, you have 10,000 computers or you have, you know, 50,000 doors in your, you know, enterprise, it's extremely big cost that you want to, and it's a longer process. And as long as you keep making the decision, you know, that threat is still there, right? Anyone can, you know, do anything to your organization. So what we have done right now, we actually brought a middleware that communicates as an activation station. So every zone would be activated through the proof of physical presence, and then your prox card will be activated for that zone. So that even if it's copied, every time you issued a new card, so you're rotating, your privileges are rotating. So we actually make that existing infrastructure stronger, right? At the same time, we make sure that your passwords are replaced. It's like right now, if we use you know, the certain tools that are out there, there is just, you know, interfacing for password. So even on your iPhone, when you actually show your facial recognition, you know, you can still enter input your PIN. So if PIN can be stolen, there's no facial recognition was not adding any security.
Yeah.
It was just bringing you convenience. So we are working from the, you know, your security standpoint. So that how you can actually manage that whole process. So where it started, I was actually known as the originator of Urdu, Arabic, and Persian scripts on the internet. So first, Washington Post broke that story, and Voice of America published it. So I was in Pakistan at that time, 19-year-old, and ended up, you know, getting a lot of job offers from Middle East because of Arabic, and ended up with the government of Dubai, became the project director for their Smart Cities Initiative and Dubai Electronic Government. From there, we actually had $196 million budget to put up all the infrastructure paperless and make you know, the processes efficient. Immigration system, judicial systems, inmate systems. You're talking about, you know, every single touch point that you have with a citizen. That's what we're, you know, I was exposed to, and this is where I was, you know, playing with biometrics, with machine vision, playing with automatic number plate recognition, again, in Arabic, because the cards are in Arabic. So created an OCR solution for Arabic. So I've been playing in this, you know, understanding that how I can create a training model and how I can, you know, train my technology to, like, a baby to understand about different things it can see from a camera. So the camera tech keep improving, and there was a time that I thought that is enough. I'm going to go back to Pakistan, pursue my family business. My family is into automotive, you know, business within my, you know, they employ over 6,000 people in multiple factories. So we actually looked at the similar concept of an airport. So in Dubai, we actually built that immigration system where an expatriate is leaving. We would scrape his database with 127 government services to make sure that you're not defaulter for any. And we'd give you a good opportunity to swipe your card, make that payment, and leave the country, or, you know, at least notify them.
Yep.
So, you know, the similar tech we actually built for the HR system in Pakistan. We started participating in international competitions. We matured our facial recognition technology in Pakistan. And from there, it expanded. You know, we won a couple of Asia Pacific ICT awards. We won the Global Innovation Through Science and Technology Award in Turkey. Joe Biden and Erdogan both were there on the stage. And then, you know, I was invited to come to the United States. And there's Jeff Margolis was, you know, running that Global Innovation Through Science and Technology from the U.S. government, U.S. Department of State. And he's a Chicago-based.
Yep.
So that's, you know, he had been a great guide for me. So the first time I had an invitation, and I went to apply for a visa, and I was refused. So they said that we don't want to do business with Pakistan. And so, but I didn't give up. There was a competition from MIT. It's called Business Acceleration Program that runs in third world countries and in developing countries where you can actually compete and have the opportunity to come to MIT and, you know, take their course. And they would actually give you the roadshows to be exposed to different companies here in the United States. And that's the competition we won. We won as the most American business ready, you know, the real use cases.
So you did the same thing that you're protecting everyone, the back door. The back door of the country. Hey, if you don't want us here, I'll just make a way to get in here. It's fine. Don't
worry. Yeah, I'll prove that you need me.
Yep,
so that's what, you know, before I was applying as a, you know, as a guest, as a visitor. Now I was like, I'll prove that you need me here, right?
So, well, it sounds like you guys have done that. So I guess, you know, we're wrapping up on time, but like what are the key takeaways you think that people need to know about biometrics as we go forward? And then, of course, where do people go to learn more about what you guys are doing and work with you and that sort of thing?
I think the biometrics are getting more and more safer. And, you know, you're going to get, because of GDPR and there's certain laws that are coming from the NIST here as well in the U.S., you'll be more and more protected, you know, from organizations keeping your data the way you like.
Yep.
And, you know, the more decentralized approach comes in, and the more secure you are. And I think the fear factor for biometrics should totally go away now. There is nothing that anyone can use without your consent.
Yeah. The part that you have talked about that I find to be particularly interesting and also I don't even know how to describe it really. The fact that it's not in a cloud and that it's sort of like I own it, I think is a huge it's going to have massive repercussions in the world because you've got companies that are making a lot of their money on the data and they're selling the data and they're doing whatever, which is making everyone more vulnerable. And I think that there's a potential for you guys to completely flip all those people on their head because you're making it to where it's not all, you know, what I do during the day is for you to sell my behavior elsewhere.
So the trend is already changing. You know, it's not, I don't have to be there to do that. It's already happening. You know, the laws are changing.
Yeah.
The laws are getting scrutinized. You know, they're scrutinizing that data.
About time.
Yeah, it's about time. It's, you know, and I think that we always believed in that people should believe, you know, own their own, you know, biometric information.
Yep.
It should not be the property. We're not an organization who would ever make money on people's data.
Yep, very cool. Where do people go to learn more about it?
Well, you can come to our office at 29 North Wacker.
That's very direct, but yes, you can show up at our office and ask questions.
You know, the other thing is I just want to acknowledge the fact that we've gotten some great influence from Jeff Margolis, from the team at Microsoft, from Built Worlds, from MHub, from 1871. This is a great ecosystem for us to work. There's a short story about Jay Schakowat, because I'd known Jay Schakowat before he sold Fieldglass. We were longtime friends from the University Club. And I brought, he and Farah and I went for an interview with Jay, and Jay gave us a 15-minute slot and said, this is so exciting. If you can wait, I can give you 2 more hours. And he gave us a laundry list of things we needed to do, including me going to Pakistan and talking to Pepsi and Nestle and Lay's and IKEA.
Yep.
And I did that and came back, and Jay became one of our original investors. And he's been a good guide along those ways. But I think the mentoring that we've gotten from Mike Embler, from Tim Mays, and from others has been extraordinary.
So I was never planned to be here in Chicago. I missed my flight to Boston on O'Hare, and that's how I met Carter. And through Carter, I met Jay, and I fell in love with the city. I said,
that's
I'm going to stay here.
The best stories are always accidental.
They are. And the city's been such... The ecosystem here in the last... In the time...
Amazing.
In Chicago, yeah. It really ramped up from a venture capital perspective, as well as from a supports perspective.
I think in the past, I don't know if we'd been able to support a company like you guys that are so far advanced in like what you're trying to do. Chicago was always kind of a risk-adverse and maybe not as creative. But I think now with the financial money that's being spent here and the ideas and the big business... companies that are coming back into Chicago, that it's
the whole ecosystem has changed. Right. There is a lot of talent here. Yep. You know, there are a lot of problem solving skills in the city, and you know, it's evolving. If you look at the M Hubs or the 1871s or the Built Worlds, they're making a huge difference. So we really appreciate Built Worlds and M Hubs' help as well in building this business where we are today.
Very cool. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course, you can catch this episode and more at technoir.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at technoir. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.